Horse Fleming a little wide with the pass. Plenty of blue shirts in the box here, though. One of them's Ashley Lawrence, who gets her first Chelsea goal.
What's good? Welcome to another episode of Diaspora United. I am Andre Carlisle, and I am here with my co-host, Courtney Stith. Courtney, how are you?
My usual, angry at the state of a lot of things, tired. But what am I most angry about? I'm happy you asked. Daylight savings.
Oh my God.
It was golden hour at 3 p.m. today. I said, how dare you? How dare you? This is emotional terrorism. How dare you do this to me? I'm so mad. It's the worst time of the year. I hate this time of the year. We lose so much sunlight.
You know what's wild is, like, it happens every year. And I feel like, all right, just prepare yourself. But it doesn't matter how much preparation I try to do. I just can't get used to the sun being, like, gone at 6 p.m. What the fuck you mean?
Andre, you want to know the worst part? I also lost, like, 6 weeks of the best sunlight hours because we were in Australia and it was winter there, which means they had shorter days already.
You know what? That's true. Yeah, that is true. So, yeah, I ain't going to complain, but this is kind of brutal.
But I'm also fighting for my life. Literally, I call the sun my best friend. I love when the sun is out. It's rained every weekend. We haven't had I'm mad. I'm so mad at the weather. The fact that I got no sunlight. It's the worst time of the year.
And then, like, it's compounded because if you have, like, pets or if you have, like, babies or something, like, they can't read clocks. So they just mad. They just staring at you like, yo, what's good? You just going to starve me? Like, this is what you decided to do? And I'm like, yo, just chill. Just so, like, they're pissed off. I'm pissed off. Like, the whole thing is pissed me off. I'm just like, can we just stop this?
Nothing is funnier than, like, someone posting, like, a video on Instagram or TikTok or something and being like, my dog at 4 p.m. being like, it's time for dinner. And you're like, no, it's not. And they're like, what do you mean?
Oh, yeah, they big mad.
It is time for dinner. Yeah, they're so big mad.
Yeah, and you can't do nothing about it. It's just like, you know, either you give in and just mess up the whole schedule or, you know, you just let them be mad for an hour. It's tough. It's tough. And then, of course, you're already mad because you ain't seen the sun. And so, I don't know. I hate it too. It's annoying. It's real annoying.
Emotional but, terrorism. No. Golden hour at 3 p.m. is terror.
Yeah, it's real bad. But we're gonna rally.
we're gonna have to
do this podcast. Now we're gonna rally. All right, let me read a review real quick before we get into it, because honestly, we got a lot to talk about. Obviously, NWSL playoffs, obviously that other big thing that happened, but let's see. Let's start with the review. Eram Tom, thank you so much. I'm not sure if I pronounced that right, but I never am. So whatever. That's my general disclaimer. If I didn't, sorry. This is called The Stats, and the review is simple. It's 5 stars, and it says, I love it when Courtney gives us all the stats. Hashtag Queen of Stats.
I knew you were going to bring this up.
Didn't use the nickname, but I appreciate the fact that you're getting recognized for Courtney The Stats doing her thing.
I knew you were going to bring this up. I knew you were going to do this to me today. I felt it in my bones. It's because of Bats 1, probably.
We're going to get into it. We're going to get into it. But no. So I appreciate y'all leaving reviews if you haven't, or if you already have. Leave another one. Who cares? There's no rules. But yeah,
but
we appreciate that.
Your favorite dad joke in for Andre.
Yeah, drop the dad jokes in there. That's an important piece. Give us 5 stars as well. All that good stuff. We appreciate it. It helps the podcast, y'all. If you listen to podcasts before, you've heard hosts beg. I ain't trying to beg too much, but consider this me begging. Please rate and review the podcast. Courtney, guess what we're going to talk about today?
The emotional terrorism caused by daylight savings.
No, we already did that. We're on to the next topic.
I'm guessing we're going to talk about all the stuff that's happened. The NWSL final is set.
The final is set. The semifinals happened. They were both very cagey, spicy, crunchy. What you say, crunchy games as well?
The first half of both of them games. Had some low light, especially OL Reign or San Diego OL Reign had some low lights. Yeah. We were like,
that's facts.
Put in some spice.
I was fully prepared. I tried to prepare the people, but yeah, we got through them. The games were good in terms of like the dramatics, the drama in them. So we're gonna talk about that, relive them. We're going to preview the NWSL Championship, which is coming up this weekend. And, of course, we're going to talk about a little thing that may have happened. Emma Hayes reportedly heading to the U.S. Women's National Team to be its new manager. We're both Chelsea fans, if you didn't know. So we have thoughts. We have opinions.
I'm not emotionally prepared for that.
Well, good news is that's the second segment. So anything to say before we get into the NWSL semifinals and the championship game?
Let's do this.
All right, let's get into it. NWSL semifinals. We're going to talk about them, you know, in order. But if you haven't heard, Portland lost to Gotham at home. Gotham with a 1-0 win.
Katie For the first Stengel. Time since 2017.
Yeah, you heard that stat. Courtney, these stats let you know about the record against Portland at home. That was a dope one. But they got the dub. That was dope. And then OL Reign got a crazy goal by Veronica Latsko to get over San Diego Wave in the second semifinal. So you're going to have OL Reign versus Gotham in the championship. But Courtney, you know what? I'm going to take it. I want you to talk about Gotham, their performance, beating Portland in Portland, handling Sophia Smith. How shook were you throughout the entire game, and or were you? Like, give it to us.
Yeah. So part of it was that I was working on Sunday all day, or for basically both of these matches. So I was not deeply paying attention to it, besides hoping a goal would happen to make my life at work easier. In full transparency, I can't lie. I was a bit surprised that Gotham went to Portland and got it done. I was a bit surprised for a few reasons. One, Gotham, like as I mentioned on the show this time last week, Gotham hadn't won in Portland in ages, been since 2017. You know, so that's a really long time to basically be winless at a venue. I also knew, you know, getting Sophia Smith back, she's obviously a handful to deal with, even though I think Gotham's center back pairing of Maitane Lopez and Ali Krieger has done particularly well. Mostly across the season, but I would say in the last, you know, 2 to 3 games, there were still times where, like, you know, Gotham could have gotten punished when they didn't, or at times, like, thinking about that game against KC, they did get punished. So yeah, I can't lie, I was really, really surprised that Gotham got the job done. I think the match was extremely cagey, really crunchy. It's funny. I remember you talking about like these two matches and you were like, oh yeah, Gotham, Portland is going to be a shootout fest. And I was like, I think it's going to be a real cagey 1-0 win, which is basically what happened. But honestly, I think Gotham got their game plan like really right. I think like between Lopez, Martin and Krieger, they shut down Sophia Smith, like, and not just in the way that we've seen defenders shut down attackers by like consistently bodying them, consistently fouling them. Like, there were also times where Sophia Smith was on the ball and there was quite simply like 4 to 5 players around her. They're like, we're not letting you get through. We're not letting you get through cleanly. I will say Gotham escaped a red card. I know that people were like that, you know, Taylor Al Krieger had 2 arms around her. I think she got lucky that Sophia Smith also had an arm like back around her, but like, you know, you're the last player back, and I understand you're far away from the goal, but like even Christina Uncle said that was like a very tight decision. She was like, I think the on-field decision was correct, but she was like very tight and could have seen it going also the other way, because we've seen a lot of dog so red cards in the NWSL this season. So if that happened, Kenley would not be surprised. Obviously I'm happy it didn't, because also, like, ending your career on a dog's red card, like, just sounds terrible fundamentally.
It is terrible, but you know what? It was just a little cuddle. You just want a little cuddle. I'm fine with that. You know, sometimes you need a cuddle.
Also, Gotham got saved by another penalty because Olivia Moultrie was offside and Mandy Hott 100% cleaned her out.
Yeah, did you see the clip that was posted on Twitter of Mandy?
And I was like, girl, I'm right there with you. I feel that. I was like, I'm going to get a lot of use out of this in the future.
I love that clip.
And I was like, fair.
You can read it all over her face, just the straight up, just all the turmoil inside. Just please save me from all this. I don't want to deal with
I mean, truly.
This call is offside. It was great.
Yeah, but I will also say, like, I think Gotham, even though I'm looking at the match stats now, where Gotham had like slightly more possession, a few more shots. They had the technically the exact same amount of shots on goal. Technically, Portland had a higher XG, even though the XG for this match was extremely low. For 120 minutes of play, Gotham's XG was 0.5 and Portland's XG was 0.62. That is extremely low.
Yeah.
Those are really, really low.
Scraps.
Yeah. I mean, I do think Portland, like the reason why Portland's as high is because of that Morgan Weaver miss, which yeah. I'm not going to say when she got the ball. I don't know if she's going to make it, but I'm not saying that. I'm not saying the idea did not flash through my mind, even though I will say, like, I do think that Gotham had the lion's share of chances. When I was, you know, obviously I rewatched the match in entirety, and then I went and rewatched, like, highlights again, heard attacking third talent talk about it. Like, to me, Gotham really did have the lion's share of chances. Even though, Andre, I do have a statistic for you, because you know how we said this match was real crunchy?
Yeah.
Gotham had 20 fouls. And Portland had 18.
Damn. Okay. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Many fouls.
You know what?
Like,
I have an unpopular opinion.
Okay.
Should I drop my unpopular opinion?
About fouls or just about the game?
About the game. The related to the fouls.
Okay.
In the game.
Okay.
Because I know, and I'm here with people, I know that like Danielle Chesky is not really like, that's a ref with a lot of history, particularly in the NWSL. It's got a lot of things wrong. Honestly, I actually felt like she did all right this game. Like, it was crunchy. It was intense. There were multiple times where you could have given, you know, like all those yellow cards didn't amount to like a red, which is good. Just kind of like cautioning the players, like, don't step over the line anymore. Like, that's it. Keep them in control without altering the game. And some of those calls. Now, some people may look at it and say, hey, like laws of the game, this call needed to be made. This should have been a penalty. But I kind of like the fact that, like, she just was like, y'all going to settle this in open play. Like, that's what I want. That's what I really want from officiating. And I'm kind of, it's kind of a vibey approach to officiating. But I really felt it because this was the kind of match that it kind of would have sucked a little bit if it was just a refereeing decision that was the difference. I wanted to see the teams on the pitch decide going up 11-11. I just got to say. I'm still not like, oh, she's a great ref now. You know, we'll see in the future. But I thought this was a good performance from her in a really, really intense and important game.
No, yeah, I know what you mean. I think when games are decided by like a fluky call that people would, you know, shout about, I do understand it. But Andre, I have some more statistics for you because this is really, it helps. It's like how my brain works, like breaking down these games. And so this really demonstrates how little Sophia Smith got on the ball. For players who played the full 120, Smith was tied. Actually, guess what player Sophia Smith was tied with in terms of touches this match from Portland?
Oof. Is it Weaver?
I'm shaking my head no for the people. No.
Yeah. Oh, who was it?
Shelby Holgan.
Oh, no.
She had the exact same amount of touches as Shelby Holgan, the goalkeeper.
Okay.
So Sophia Smith and Hogan had 39 touches, and the only two players who played more than a half, I'll say, who had less than Sophia Smith were Klingenberg and Rocky Rodriguez, but Kling only played for 59 minutes, or 60 minutes.
Yeah.
Rodriguez played for 59, like,
yeah.
Meanwhile, on the flip side, someone like Sinead Farley, who came in, played for 40 minutes, and yes, this is across the full 120, Sinead Farley had 33 touches in nearly a quarter of the time, so... and then for looking at this, like, Peirce didn't have a ton of touches. She only had 44. So did Esther Gonzalez. They both played 80 minutes. But I do think it really does illustrate how well Lopez and Krieger did in really taking Sophia Smith out of the game. Weaver had 61 touches, in case you were curious. But yeah, they really did like very much take Sophia Smith out of the game. And also want to give a shout out to Katie Stengel. That's the type of goal I've been wanting Gotham to score all season. Because for folks who watch Gotham and have watched Gotham closely, you know they love putting 75 passes around the box. And it's like, someone hit it. Just put your laces through the ball and hit it. And that's not, to be fair, that's not what Katie Stengel did. She had a beautiful curler. Like, yeah. That is not a goal where you're just like, hit it. Like, that's not the type of goal she scored. But I am happy that it was like, shoot. And it was like, she shot ball. And then look what happens when you shoot. Oh my God, brain blast. But yeah, honestly, I think Gotham's game plan worked really, really well. I'm trying to remember correctly, but I believe when Juan Carlos Amoros took over Houston, they went unbeaten against Portland when he first took over. So it's almost like, I mean, I know Gotham lost against Portland earlier this season, but that was like a, you know, very, very tight, like that 1-0. So again, a super tight match, and Gotham also could have gotten an equalizer, things like that. But yeah, I think Gotham honestly did the thing and did what they needed to do. Want to give a shout out to my girl, Becky Sauerbrunn. Thought she was killing in that back line. She was clamping things down.
Yeah, Becky was good. Becky was really, really good this game.
She was real good. And yeah, but look, Gotham's now going to the chip. I will not be going, and I'm deeply heartbroken that I will not be going. But Gotham's going to the chip, and I love that. How did you feel about this match?
I thought this game was great. It was super intense, and even though it wasn't like the gold, like the back and forth goal fest that I hoped for, and I need to stop hoping for things like that in a knockout game, basically, because everybody's gonna be a little shook to really let things go. But you know, I know that Portland has this weird, like they've played like that all season, where they're just like, you know what, if we got to win this game 5-4, we'll do it. But they couldn't figure that out. And I think there are a couple things. Like you said, the defense on Sophia Smith was great. There were multiple people around her. And I thought that when she got the ball, she would do her Sophia Smith thing and dribble out of pressure. But she was always dribbling either laterally or backwards. She never got to go forward, like to goal, where she is so dangerous. Could have been, of course, this was her first start, like real game back. You know, she did start for the U.S. Women's National Team over the break. But you know, this is her first time starting, and I think this was the first time she actually didn't even have like anything on her knee, on the injured knee. I can't remember if she had something on it for the U.S. Women's National Team
she
game,
did.
But she, yeah, I thought I remembered something, but yeah, so this is the first time. So clearly she felt like she was 100%, but just maybe a little bit out of rhythm to be able to have the kind of impact she needed in a game this intense. But other thing that I thought was dope is that Gotham controlled possession. You know, they had it was 56-44, I believe. That's what Fob Mob have it. I think looking at FB Ref, they have it at 46. But even if you're looking at that, there were only three other times throughout the entirety of the season, Challenge Cup included, that Portland had less than 46% of the possession. They happen to have won every single one of those games. But so they can do it, but it's not what they usually do. They normally dominate the ball, have a ton of the possession, and that's what they want to do. They just kind of keep coming at you and coming at you and coming at you. And to be honest, like one of those games where they only had like it was a split possession with the Spirit, but that's because they scored 4 goals. It was 4-2. So that was that game. And it was interesting. And this was like the second time Gotham had done that to them, because Gotham in the regular season, 45% possession. So it was kind of a split. Portland ended up winning that game 1-0. So Gotham it seems like Gotham learned from that a little bit, knew that they could control Portland. They just needed to take their chances. And I'm telling, like early, I was a little shook. I thought Gotham was maybe going to do that. You know, the thing happens, you know what it is. And I tweeted about this. There's the karma finishing demon that exists. Yeah. If you miss your chances, it comes out and it says, okay, you're either going to concede a banger or an own goal or something stupid is going to happen on the other end because it needs you to be clinical. Gotham even avoided that happening, because I think Lynn Williams had an open. She was great this game, by the way. Defensively, she was incredible. Mm-hmm. And even in attack, she was incredible. But she did have that one free header that she missed. There were a couple times, shots that just missed as well. And I was thinking, ooh, I don't want anything like brutal to happen, because as much as you think I hate on Gotham, I actually
you
want
do hate on Gotham. Gotham hater right there. Gotham hater, well, hater number
actually
one.
Actually pulling for, and think about what that means. I was pulling for them in the depths of my heart, even though the
Spoken
other team has Sophia
Gotham
Smith
hater.
And Crystal Dunn. And Crystal Dunn. Come on.
Do you want to know a sad stat about our fave?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Please tell the people.
Everybody
oh, my
sad
gosh.
Stat.
This is outrageous.
This is the first game, or sorry, the first playoff game that Crystal Dunn has played in that she has not won since what? Mm-hmm. The 2016 NWSL final. Do you want to know where Crystal Dunn played and who they played against?
Tell the people.
Crystal Dunn played for the Washington Spirit And it was against the Western New York Flash. And guess who got the equalizer to send the game to penalties for the Western New York Flash? Lynn Williams. And guess who was Lynn Williams' teammate at the time? Katie Stengel.
Correct.
So, I mean, what a blast from the past, even though it did hurt.
Apparently you need a combination of Lynn Williams and Katie Stengel to beat Crystal Dunn in the playoffs. And Gotham figured that out. Shout out to Yale. That's how you do it. That's deep research right there.
Yeah, even though I will say, like, Katie Stengel has still been really good coming in, like, since she joined Gotham. And I felt I was, you know, because sometimes you kind of feel for players who, you know, are, like, working hard and aren't getting looks and aren't scoring goals. So also the fact that she scored that goal was just like, and I mean, that goal's a banger. I love when bangers go in. Okay.
When she was checking in, did you think that's who's scoring the game, that game winner? Like, she's going to score.
No, but Steph Young did.
I'm mad I didn't tweet it because I was like, oh, this is the exact type of sub that comes in. It's just like, she just has an energy about her. We saw it, you know, basically all season with Liverpool, which was great, a great signing for them. But you could just, she's just one of those players that gets in and finds a way to, like, just do something to have an impact. I mean, I remember her in that Chelsea game. She annoyed the hell out of me.
Oh, my God. I don't want to talk about that.
It's really frustrating. But that's just her energy. It's what she does.
Yeah, in that game, actually, to be fair, I wasn't exactly thinking about her coming in and scoring because I was at work and ADing a show, and it was like, hey, Courtney, what are we going to do? Because this game's still in overtime. Do you think they're going to go to penalties? Are we going to have to slide all of our programming? So that's what I was thinking. So by that point, I was like, someone please, for the love of God, score. Like, someone please just score a goal so this game doesn't go to penalties. I was like, I don't want to live through penalties at work. That sounds like it's my worst nightmare. But yeah, honestly, shout out to Gotham, because I do think they got their game plan exactly right. And it was even funny at moments where I think when as you mentioned, like how Portland sometimes likes that, you know, if they can win 5-4, they will win that way. And there were moments, and I think Gotham might have scouted that, because there were moments where, like, the crowd was really getting into it, you know, they're like, you know, bad fouls here and there. And you could actually see Juan Carlos Amoros, Coach of the Year, by the way, shout out, Coach of the Year, what, very well deserved.
Yep. Full disclosure, I voted for Sean Nahas first, but that's fine.
Full disclosure, I voted for Juan Carlos first because you didn't see Gotham from last season up close, okay? All the players are great players, but it was at times. Have you ever been in a group project with too many people and no one decides to take the lead? And so you just kind of vibe out each week, and sometimes it works really well and sometimes it doesn't. That honestly is how I would spiritually encapsulate Gotham of last season. And they went from that to not only having such clear game plans each week, but they went from like 11 player group think to every single person on that field, including the goalie, knowing where they need to be at all times in every single situation. But also, and I think this is what is really important, and if you like watch Gotham closely again, especially like in the stadium, you would see it. They also knew everyone else's roles and where everyone else needed to be. So if there was a moment where Gotham could have been, like, someone could have hit them on the counter if they were at a corner, it wasn't just whoever is closest to your own net get back first. But you see those players get back there and hold down a back four for sometimes a player or two until things shifted back to normal. Like, the actual revolution that Gotham has went through, and I know, like, that's naturally going to happen when you have a team that goes from, I don't call it zero to hero, but, like, that's, you know, the phrase that a lot of people have been using. But it really went from, like, you know, kind of 11 player group think at times to, like, everyone knows where, like, there were times where, like, you know, Midge was an outside back for a few plays, or Yasmin Ryan was an outside back for a few plays, or, like, people would just, like, knew where to shift around to where they needed to for a few plays, and then they would eventually get back to their norm. But, like, it just has fully, like, truly revolutionized the team.
Yeah, I think my thing is, when I saw Gotham play the Spear, my thing was that, like, their press is super organized. Like, they just make it so it's really hard to find ways to use the ball effectively, like get it behind the line, work out space, be able to find that space wherever the space is. They're just super, super organized in that way. And then, of course, they have super dangerous players on the attack again. So once they get the ball over, they can either hold it, recycle it themselves, or they can just go direct and attack you. And so they kind of keep you in balance a little bit. And I think they did a good job of that against Portland. Portland never really felt settled. We never really saw Portland the way we're used to them, with like Sam Coffey at the base being able to put her foot on the ball, direct traffic, move players around, hit those quick strikes. I do think that Portland messed up a little bit, because I think, and this could have been impact of the international break, because I think Hina Sagita would have been like, that was a player that needed to come on. And I thought if she came on at the 60 minute mark, and I was like, yeah, I'm guessing that she had long travel. I think she had to travel from Uzbekistan to Portland. So that's a really tough flight. And I mean, geez, what was that? I was trying to do the math. It's probably like 18 hours, I think, of flight time. It's a lot of flight time to get back. And I was like, man, if she could have started, maybe they would have been able to do some things, because she's super clever. And they really needed another runner, given what all the attention Gotham was paying to Sophia Smith, and rightly so. If they could have just found that one clever runner to find that space, but they really didn't have that. And not that like Morgan Weaver can't make runs, but she's not crafty with her run. She kind of like finds space, attack space, whereas Sagita is kind of like, she's way more cerebral in the way that she reads the games, and her movement is really, really impressive. So I was like, ooh, if they could have had her, maybe that changes some things. But also then again, I mean, Gotham was doing so well, maybe not.
Yeah, well, I mean, I will say, like, thinking about Gotham's regular season game, when they went to Portland, Sagita was, like, outside of scoring that goal, she was also really clinical and kind of disrupting the way Gotham plays at times. And so, yeah, she was a huge miss, and that is a factor in the international break. Like, even though it's kind of tough for the NWSL, because it's like,
when do you want it, right?
I mean, yeah, it's like, when do you want it? Because it has to be at the end of the season, which we know is going to be October, November. Like, September, October, November, there are basically three international windows. Right. So it's either, like, do you hold it and then have these players playing, you know, closer to Thanksgiving, maybe? Like, it's just, like, you're constantly in a rock and a hard place. And I know people were saying, like, you know, it's kind of the curse of the international window, or kind of the curse of the bye, really. And I mean, I think in one way you could say that for Portland, but it's also not like Portland didn't have their chances in like that Morgan Weaver chance, like that was at the 88th minute. You sink that and you were going to San Diego. And like, I mean, it's also why, like, you know, winning championships, sometimes you just need a bit of luck on your side. And like, that was a true moment of luck for Gotham, but it's not like they, you know, did not have chances when like that, you know, for that. And I mean, in that moment of Sophia Smith getting through, like, they didn't super trouble Mandy Hott, but also at the same time, like, you know, you take that chance, you're there. We're not even like, also, we're not talking about the international break, or we're saying like, see, look how good of a team Portland is. The international break and a bye week doesn't bother them.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Anything else to say about this game before we move to San Diego and OL Reign?
No.
All right. Go Bats.
Go all right.
San Diego, OL Reign. OL Reign with the one goal, the only goal in the game, a 47th minute Schross. I can't even call it a Schross.
No,
it
that's
just
a Schross.
Cross.
Okay.
But it was just a cross.
Yeah, that's,
that's all it was. But it was also weird, because I was like, the ball's going over your head. Like, obviously, that's a thing, but don't just look at it, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know what I will say also, and I feel like in that moment, you expect the ball, like where she was, obviously she was crossing, but you also expect the ball to bend out. And the way Letzko hit it, and I fundamentally don't know if it was like, to me, the way that ball moved was like broke physics.
It
broke
stupid.
My brain because I was like, I'm 95% sure you hit that with the inside of your foot and somehow it swerved out. So that way it would hit the goal. Yeah. Like I don't know how that happened.
I feel like if you take basically a player without, and this is not me like not understanding the talent level on the pitch, but I think if you took players like professional footballers and said, okay, put her in that spot where Letzko hit that ball and say, I need you to hit the inside of the far post, but the ball can't be like, the ball has to go over the goal. Like, I'll give you three tries to do it. I think a few get it within those three tries, but I think it's also very tough. So doing it in like a playoff game is just like wild. But also, she didn't mean to do it.
I was like, I don't know.
The physics of it was wild.
I don't know if a professional footballer would honestly, I don't think anyone would be able to do it. Like, I truly think it was a feat of nature, because it's not like it's not like one of those ones where you like purposely hit it with basically like the center outside of your boot so it would curl a certain way. She just, like, that was just, like, a feat of, like, it's the type of thing where it's, like, you give it to her, like, you give a player 100 tries, and maybe they hit it once. But, like, the way she, like, had, struck the ball of a, just a kind of a regular, more, I would say, honestly, like an outswinging cross. Like, I was like, how did, like, I've watched that goal so many times. Like, I was like, the end of it still needs to get more angles because I want to watch that goal in like 17. Like, I want to watch in every single angle that you can offer me because I'm like, I still don't know how she hit the ball that way. And the fact that the inside of that ball hit the post. Because she was also only like probably 2 yards from the touchline, if that. She was like pretty close to the touchline. It was the tight angle.
Because I think the problem, the hardest part about a strike like that, if you were trying to replicate it with like on purpose, is that it would be hard and like not have the ball go out of play once it goes like over the goal. That's the other thing. But I have some questions for you about this game.
Sorry, I'm still watching angles of that goal, and it's still breaking my brain.
I've been looking at your face wondering, like, did news break or something?
Dude, I'm just listening there going, how'd she do that? Because I went and I watched the close-up of how she struck the ball, and I'm like, the ball should not move in the way it moved. She also literally hit side. At first, I thought she hit the inside of the post, and it kissed. No, she just directly hit side netting. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no.
Even though I do think, honestly, you probably give a professional footballer 100 balls, maybe they hit it like 2 or 3 times after watching it again. But I'm still saying it's just breaking my brain. She literally just struck through the ball and somehow got there.
Yeah, that's why I tweeted what I tweeted with that goal. It's just sometimes you just got to put your foot through the ball and like let God decide. And I felt like that was one of those moments where God was like, all right, well, I'm just going to bend the rules of y'all universe a little bit and we're going to have the ball go in the net because you know what? This leads me to my point. God doesn't love suffer ball. I'm just claiming it right now. The Lord does not appreciate suffer ball.
I think that's fair. But to answer your question, yeah, I do think Jaden Shaw changed the way that San Diego played and made them a lot more dynamic in attack. But, and I also, well, I don't like the Buddha to Cornea's forehead and have the on-running Alex Morgan get it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, that's...
It's not really a plan.
It's not really. It's like a. It's like your Hail Mary that you decide to like trot out every.
It's not a plan.
Also, the Hail Mary like they needed offense at the end of this game that they did not do, and I was like,
What?
Like, this is your literal. Like, this is your fail safe, tried and true ball on Kordiak's forehead to Alex Morgan somewhere, and it did not work. Yeah, I think obviously having a player like Jaden Shaw helps. But I think also Olerin's game plan really took Shaw out of the match. I really, like, we did not see her dominance in the way that we've seen before. And, yeah, I think if, like, this match had went to 120 or something, like, if Lasco didn't get that goal, I do think Olerin would have gotten there in the end. Just by, like, the clear amount of chances they, like, it felt like they had. And also by, like, the quality of chances that San Diego had. Like, I don't think they necessarily really tested Dickey ever, really. Even though I know they technically won the XG battle, like, and had more shots, but they had less shots on goal. Like, I just don't think that, yeah, like, if, you know, if you play that match out to 120, I think Olerin ends up getting, because, I mean, Olerin had a few, especially in the second half, when the match really kind of woke up. Pino had a ridiculous ball to Latsko again, actually. She had a ridiculous cross-field ball that swung close to the back line and then came out. It was actually like it went so far that it was like in swinging to out swinging, like the trajectory of the ball. But it was like, I saw it and I was like, oh, that's an insane pass. Me going full sicko mode, rewatching the highlights. I was like, oh my God, this is an absolutely insane pass. It was actually a moment where I was like, let's go take one touch and hit it to the far corner. Cause I was like, Sheridan's not going to expect that. She's probably not going to get there, to make, you know, give it a solid 2-0 win. But yeah, I don't think San Diego would have done it. I also I haven't really been happy this season with how Casey Stoney has been using a player like Amir Ali. It's been quite frustrating over the course of the season. I think last season when you did have Ali come in, because again, like, and it's just kind of this new breed of, I don't call them breed, but like it's this new brand of young players across the board. Like just these Gen Z bullies in general, like they know, they can also, you know, if you need them to step in to play as a 10 for a play or two, they can do that. Like they can, or they can like find ways to kind of create chances for themselves. Especially from players who come from college programs that aren't like, let's say like the biggest college programs or aren't super system dominant, if that makes sense. And so, yeah, I was like really disappointed that Ali only got, you know, 12 minutes when you know you need a goal. And you also know you have a player who can, I think, maybe like honestly a bit more than their other attackers outside of Shaw, can really go like, you know, 1v1 and have some tricky feet to get around your press or get around, you know, your two player double team. And so, yeah, like the fact that I think Ali wasn't involved more, I think that was a big miss for Stoney.
Yeah, like that's kind of been my thing with Stoney is like, I know, and it's kind of my thing like about ultra defensive managers is I know that like it is a route to win a game. You know, you can do that. I root for Chelsea. Jose Mourinho's Chelsea is ultra annoying. It was funny when we did it to other people, but it wasn't exactly like when you're winning trophies, you can deal with it. When you're not winning, that's frustrating as hell to watch.
Look, I watched fun. Jose Mourinho's Roma. Okay.
Yeah,
it's not
exactly.
Fun.
It's not fun. It's annoying. And you're like, you can commit more than one or two players at a time to the attack. Like sometimes overloads are the only way to actually like pull apart a defense, cause confusion in the box, do something else so that you can get a high XG chance. I mean, I'm looking at them right now. They had four shots that needed to be saved. Two of those from Alex Morgan, one from Mackenzie Doniak, one in stoppage time from Carusa. The total XG, pre-shot XG on those chances was 0.16 cumulative combined. 0.16. One was a 0.07, one was 0.02, another 0.02, and another 0.04. Now, Morgan's shots, post-shot, they were actually decent chances. She kind of turned them into decent chances. But still, 0.24 and 0.29 post-shot XG for her two chances. Every other shot was off target or blocked. That's not good enough. Like, that's just not good enough. I know they had a lot of chances, like shots inside the box. But a lot of those, they had more shots that were blocked than shots that actually had to be saved. And it's just like, you have to have more of a threat. You can't be that predictable. You have to move players around. You have to move defenders around. And that's always been kind of my beef. And it's like, it's a way to win like a shield, which I don't, again, I'm a proponent of the shield. I don't want to act like it doesn't matter because I think it's a massive achievement. But I also think when you get into games like this where you need to win, you need to have another style of play. We've even kind of seen managers back and forth where they're like, okay, we're going to like press like crazy. We're going to have something that we do for like 15, 20 minutes, and then we're going to back off. So like you can mix it up a little bit as well to keep the other team off balance. And even like when you go down a goal, sometimes you need to like shift into another gear as well. And we also saw Manchester United, they couldn't do that. A lot of that was some of that was injuries, but other times she just didn't allow that to happen. And then we're seeing it a bit now with San Diego when it comes to those big games. It's really tough. And I know it's kind of brutal to say because their playoff exits over the past couple of years was that absolute banger by Crystal Dunn last year. And then this year, it's an absolutely outrageous goal that broke both of our brains. That was like the cross shot situation from Lasco. So like the margins are fine, but it's also like you're putting yourself in position where these are the things that take you out. So yeah. You know what? I want to spend some time real quick because we have something else fun to talk about. But I want to talk about the NWSL Championship. It is Saturday, November 11th at 8 p.m. Eastern, prime time on CBS. Big body CBS as well. Courtney, OL Reign versus Gotham FC. How you see this one going?
Sorry, I'm deep looking in these statistics about OL Reign versus San Diego. I was looking at their sequences.
These stats got caught.
I was just honestly quite simply looking at them and seeing. But the funny thing is, it's like, yeah, OL Reign technically like lost the XG battle, but like also lost like a lot of stat battles. Fascinating.
Yeah. Harvey had to suffer ball too. She suffered ball 2 weeks, like against Angel City and in this game. And that's why I'm a little concerned about the final, because I'm like, I don't think suffer ball is going to work against Gotham.
I mean, technically it would. Gotham is like, if you let Gotham kind of get in their rhythm of passing. You know, sometimes they are hard to stop, but I don't know. I'm trying to remember, like, obviously the first game that Gotham played at OL Reign this season, it was a 4-0, and everyone was just like, what? I remember I was at work and I was like, Gotham did what now? And I'm trying to remember what the other match was, even though I'm pretty sure it was probably an OL Reign win. Maybe a tie. Honestly, I don't know. I think this match is going to be a really interesting matchup. I think both teams are, like, obviously when you're in a final, you're going to go for it. But I think both of these teams also have very large external reasons to go for it. It being Pino's last game ever, Ali Krieger's last game ever, Honestly, I don't know. I mean, I like could also like Gotham find a way to like, can you suffer ball? Like, I don't know, but I don't think, I also don't
think
that's
Gotham's
like,
gonna suffer ball.
No, I like don't. It's like not really their mode. Yeah, I mean, they might pass the ball like 1,000 times and not do anything, but it's not really gonna like feel like suffer balling it. Honestly, I don't know. I mean, I would love it for it to be like, I don't know, 4-3 in the end. Like give it just.
I ain't making no more of those predictions. You ain't gonna bait me to do this. Again.
I know. I'm just saying,
I've
like,
been wrong.
Like,
I've been hella wrong.
No, I know, but just like give it, like give Big CBS just like a huge banger. Like just make the game like chaos, but in the best way of like someone scores. Oh my god, someone else turns and scores. Oh my god, like all this stuff. Don't do it like Tottenham Chelsea that we just all lived through on the men's side, which it was like this game.
Game is so chaotic.
This game is drunk. This game needs to go home and have a cold shower. Yeah, honestly, I don't know. What are you thinking for this match?
Whatever I'm thinking is going to be wrong, and the complete opposite is going to happen. But regardless, I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway. I think I'm concerned about Laura Harvey learning the wrong lessons from the past two games. I know it's been tough for OL Reign. You know, when it comes to these kind of knockout games, I know the record isn't always great. And I think that her really kind of like, make sure you deal with the other team's threats first and extinguish those first. And then if we happen to be able to create something in some spaces that we get on the back of that, then cool. If not, let's just focus on making sure the other team doesn't go at us. My concern with Gotham is that, yeah, look at that squad. And I mean, what, when that game started, Esther was playing in midfield. Like she was dropping all the way back to be, like get on the ball and stuff. Like it, like they will do whatever they need to do to move the ball forward. Yeah. Like they will mess your game plan up. You think, okay, this player is going to be in this spaces. Maybe not really. Right. And so I'm a little worried about that from an OL Reign perspective. What I would really love to see is both of these teams ball out, like try to go for it. Because looking at these squads, we could have, I mean, there were some runs that Rose Lavelle made that I'm like, there's vintage Rose. That's the pink lava I know. Like, that's what I'm here for. So, like, when that one where she just cut off straight through, she basically cut somebody up in the defensive line and took off, like, straight through the defense, straight down the middle of the pitch, cross midfield, touchdown. Like, I'm sorry. I ain't going to let that field go because that shit was annoying.
I mean, also, very annoying. The quality of the field looks atrocious and you're about to have a final there.
It was awful. It looked awful. It better not look like that. It better not look like that.
Are they going to replace the grass? Have they ever replaced the grass? Do they do that?
I don't know. I need to know more about like how that stadium is constructed. I know that other stadiums can do that. I know you can like resod something or you can put on another surface and all of that business. I don't know how Snapdragon is made to where you can do that, but I hope to God it is. Yeah. I know they have like basically a week to get it ready, but like it looked real bad. And I was concerned about that situation. I'm glad nobody got hurt on it because that was kind of my biggest fear.
Well, the last time Gotham played at Snapdragon, everyone got really hurt. That's where McCall Zerboni tore her ACL. That's where Abby Smith broke, ruptured every ligament in her like both legs. Like it was bad.
It's like I'm glad that you have like your stadium that's big that you can pack out and everything. Like that's cool, but sharing it with another team, especially an American football team that's going to eat that pitch to pieces, like that kind of scares me a little bit. So I don't know what the pitch is going to look like. I'm really, really like the only thing I can do is hope and pray. So that's what I'm going to do because I don't want something like that to affect the final. But we got to do better than that. I don't know if their plan is to eventually find a way to did a soccer specific stadium. They might need to look at investing in that because this doesn't, I don't know if you're expecting the season to overlap with college football. To me, that's not a viable option. I know it's only a handful of games at the end of the year, but it doesn't matter.
No, but by next season, you also have another MLS team in there.
Oh God, I forgot about that.
I genuinely think, like, I mean, I think it's probably an open secret that the next final will likely be held in Kansas City because they will have that stadium.
Yep.
Built.
Only 11,000 people, though, so I'm like, get those tickets early. Jesus.
Get those tickets real early. But also at the same time, I'm like, I think you... Like in the future, the NWSL, I know we're getting off the topic of the game, but I think in the future, the NWSL is going to have to start hosting these like championships at a Red Bull, at an Audi, at a BMO. I mean, I don't want a stadium hosted on turf, which is why I didn't throw Seattle in there, but like you also got to start holding them at these like extremely high quality soccer pitches, because like it also matters like for the quality of the pitch. Like I know San Diego, you know, San Diego went and won the Shield, and also they offered to host. Not everyone offered to host, but like I think about even the quality of Louisville, like two years ago when the Spirit won, and like they spray painted the grass green.
they painted the grass.
Like literally, like I remember, what was it, Tatum Milazzo, like had a slide tackle, and she got up, and the side of her leg was just green, and it was like, that's not normal. But I just think like you gotta, like that's got to be a factor for the league moving forward. Of you need to be able to host these matches at stadiums where like you're not worried about the quality of the pitch. And I mean, you can even host it at Houston or something, like one of these, you know, fields that are shared with an MLS team. Cause like you can speak to Audi a bit more, but like Red Bull is always in really good shape.
Yeah, to be honest, Audi gets a little weird. I think there's some cheapness going on with the way that they handle that pitch throughout seasons. Because, but also this year they also had, what was it, XFL or whatever was going on. So they also had an American football team that tore that pitch up from time to time.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that was not good. Yeah, they had like I don't remember what the team name was called, but yeah, that was a problem.
Washington Monuments.
Big long stretches of like just like strips of dirt at one point. So it was not good. I mean, speaking of injuries, Tori Huster tore her Achilles there. Sophia Smith got injured there as well. So like sometimes that pitch is not in the best shape either.
Okay, when we take Audi out of the equation.
Early in the season, and when DC United doesn't make the playoffs, then there's plenty of time to actually get the pitch right. Like, it looked fine for a bit, but, like, yeah, I'm concerned about – that pitch isn't always in the best of shape, I'll say. But back to my prediction. I actually think that I'm kind of favoring Gotham. Like I said, I really want Gotham to win this, like, for a number of reasons. Like, we didn't mention it, but I'm going to mention it here. I was kind of going to wait till the end to say this, but, like, listen – one of the best things that this season gave us. I think one of the best things that the NWSL has given us, period, in terms of like on pitch, was Sinead Farley and Mana Shim being on a team that went into Portland and beat the Thorns in front of Merritt Paulson. Fuck out of here.
Yeah, that was pretty delicious. I can't lie. I mean, like also looking at the final, like I feel like we would all have a moral victory if Gotham won with Sinead and Mana on their team.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, I mean, we all want them to succeed.
Yeah. And of course, it also has the big billing of Krieger and Pino's last game as an NWSL championship. Like, that's great. Like, shout out to Ryan Rosenblatt, who dropped a tweet talking about She Who Shall Not Be Named and how she used to went on a book tour
instead of
like being with her team, like all that stuff. I know this is me talking, this ain't Courtney talking. But, like, I think Pino, to a certain degree, like toward the end of her career, like especially with the 2019 World Cup, she was kind of like, if I'm gonna give what I got, I'm gonna give it in the World Cup. But like, she's an OG NWSL player. Same thing with Allie Krieger. So I think it's kind of dope that those two last games an NWSL championship. That's really, really dope as well.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Pino loves like growing to the moment too.
It's true.
She does, but also Lynn Williams is right there.
I'm excited. I think of the matchups we could have had, like I know Portland would have been a good game as well, but I also think that Gotham just has that little extra something that can really frustrate or bother OL Reign. And so that's why I'm kind of looking at the matchup and being like, this could go either way, but I'm kind of looking at how Gotham's going to approach the game. Because that's kind of going to give you, I think that's going to matter more than whatever OL Reign does, which is kind of a big thing to say, given like the status of Harvey's OL Reign and how good they've been over the years.
Yeah. Honestly, like, yeah, it's hard for me to like picture how this game is going to pan out, because you do have those two external, like, and I mean, I will say, I'm going to say solidly for the last 6 weeks, Gotham has very much been like, we're doing this for Allie Krieger. And I also think that's like a really good motivating force. But also at the same time, now you've technically done it for Allie Krieger. Like, unless it's, like, win Allie Krieger a ship, but, like, so much of it was, like, you know, get to the next match, you know, get to the final, all that stuff that's kind of been their rallying cry. And so they kind of, they've already got there. And so I feel like also maybe the motivation slightly changes. Honestly, I don't know. Because also Gotham and OL Reign split the series this year. Gotham won 4-0 and then OL Reign actually, like, they both won away. And Gotham, to be fair, is normally particularly good away. Or at least they started off the season really, really, like, getting the majority of their points away. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It's the elder millennial derby.
And I heard Gotham is staying on the West Coast. So, that, I think that's really smart as well. I mean, it's only a week, so it'd be a little silly to come back.
Oh, yeah.
It'd
be extremely silly for them to return.
So,
but yeah, I would love if Sinead Farley just wasted this shit. Also, with the new Tiffany trophies.
Yeah, need that.
I was like, I will say that those new trophies are nice. They got to make like a cup that players can drink out of.
Yeah, and missing a cup action, but they do look dope. They need to also redo the shield because it deserves that level of importance as well.
You don't like the metal cocktail plate?
Yeah, I'm sorry. No, I'm just
what?
I'm going on record and saying like that ain't good enough.
Oh my god, what a hot take! Not for the cocktail plate, the appetizer platter.
Right.
Literally.
Hors d'oeuvres.
Alex Morgan and Caitlin Sheridan try to hoist it together. And I was like, babe, is that not going to work? It's too small.
No, it's not. It reminds me of the Rugby World Cup, which is like a little tiny, looks like an urn.
Oh,
and
really?
And these big-ass like refrigerator looking dudes lift that thing. And it is one of the funniest trophy lifts in sports. That shit is hilarious.
Wait, Rugby World Cup. That is so funny.
It's pretty tiny. While you look that up, do you have anything
else? It's tiny.
See? Yeah. It's a little baby. It's a little baby.
Ah, oh my god, is it smaller? I think it's smaller than the FA Cup.
Oh yeah, it's definitely smaller than the FA Cup.
Oh my god, create a real trophy. Well, to be fair, it's not the top part of the trophy. It technically screws on like the Stanley Cup. It like screws on and off, but yeah, y'all gotta make a bigger trophy. Not with that baby trophy. It's smaller than some of their heads. Hilarious. But Andre, there's other big news this week that I'm still not emotionally prepared to talk about, but we're going to talk about it.
All right, Courtney, we got to talk about this news. And whether you're emotionally prepared or not, I hope that 2-second break gave you all the time to settle your emotions.
I'm not emotionally prepared for it because, unfortunately, I love Chelsea more than many other things in this world.
Oh, anti-American.
Because I freaking love this stupid footballing institution. I love them so much.
So, if you haven't heard, it was reported after Chelsea's 6-0 win against Aston Villa, which was a hilarious game because Chelsea had 6 different goal scorers for every on that day. And they could have scored more, which is a hilarious thing. And Gule Wrighton and Sam Kerr did not play. So, like, that's the kind of Chelsea we're talking about here. After that game, it was a statement drop from Chelsea, which I had to like double check the account like 400 times to be like, am I being like, is somebody tripping? Is this a fake tweet?
Also from the men's account.
Yeah, from the men's. That's what got me. I saw that and I was like, excuse me? Like, why is this happening? I didn't know if like somebody had hacked him or whatever. Like, I was just waiting to feel like, okay, like delete that. What is going to happen? But it basically said that Emma Hayes, this is going to be your last season. She won't be returning as Chelsea manager next season. And it said that she was going to pursue an opportunity that is not in club football and not in the WSL. So basically that meant obviously international football. Of course, speculation went rampant. Talked to some people who kind of like some sources because all the whispering started happening. And some people were saying maybe it's Spain. Didn't think it was going to be the England job because I don't think like Serena's still doing that. And she's still like pretty embedded for this cycle. We'll see after the Olympics if she sticks around. But like, it was like, what's going to happen? And then, of course, you know, the U.S. links come out, which was awfully, honestly a bit of a shock because when we saw that shortlist from The Athletic, her name wasn't on it. Now, they said that there were other candidates that were being, you know, could come up, but they hadn't gotten far enough down that road to be able to either have her included in that. And apparently, according to all reports, maybe this will even be announced by the time you're listening to this. Emma Hayes is super close to becoming the next manager for the U.S. women's national team. Courtney, your reaction to everything that happened on that fateful Saturday.
My initial reaction is, good God, why did this happen today? Why? Because y'all know how much I work. And I was enjoying my time at the farmer's market. I was having a good time. Seeing some puppies, seeing some dogs, getting brunch with my friends because we love going to our local dosa spot. It's only there on Saturdays. I was going to say hi to the guys from the jerk chicken spot. I was going to have a good Saturday, not do nothing. And then this news dropped. And first I said, God, why? And then I said, oh my gosh. And then my phone started blowing up. with people from work. And I was like, cool. The day off that I wanted to have is gone. And then several different things popped in my head. First, they like still haven't. Okay, so if they announce Emma on when you guys listen to this on Wednesday, November 8th, it will still be at least 3 days after Chelsea announced that she was not returning. Like, why right now? Like, I know that the U.S. Women's National Team said that they were going to have a coach appointed by December, but so much of it for me is like literally why right now? And like fully taking away like the, I wanted to spend my day having a good time at the farmer's market. But like, if this announcement wasn't dropped, like if this, why would Chelsea come out with this statement? Also, if it was technically her appointment was pending board approval and all that stuff. I was just like, why is it right now? Like, there were reports out that the players did not know and like basically found out like after their win, because they knew that someone was either going to like break an embargo or leak it or something like that, which.
That's what I think it was.
Yeah. Which I know a lot of people, which I know like a lot of like, you know, England based Chelsea fans were really, really mad about. They were like, the goddamn Yankees, which I was like, it's hilarious that people call them Yankees, but on a side note. But it's honestly kind of hilarious to me at this point, but it's just like funny that they do that.
It's very silly.
It's extremely silly. But yeah, I was like, even if it was going to get linked until the U.S. was like ready to announce Emma, I was like, Chelsea didn't have to comment. Like, you could have just had, in theory, the rumor mill for like a few days. So I don't know. And well, so that be and that begins my complicated feelings.
I was going to say, so Chelsea's ownership now is.
Oh, well, you know, the domino meme. The block meme, mm-hmm. It was...
Yes, exactly, yes.
Technically, people put it earlier, but it was like Roman Abramovich mm-hmm. signing Chelsea Domino's. Emma Hayes becoming U.S. Women's National Team coach. Mm-hmm. It was very funny to me. Yes. Look, maybe we can't be so mad at Toddy, but maybe we can still be a little mad how the men's team is doing. We can't be so mad.
It depends on who replaces Emma Hayes. that's what we'll have to figure out.
Yeah, and I mean, and it's tough, right? Like, it's always really difficult when, and like, Andre, I think I can fully say this for almost every single Chelsea fan, like, every single Chelsea women's fan, that you don't really have a huge history of the club without Emma. And I'm not even saying that for, mm-hmm. like, U.S. fans, and if some people start treating me being like, I started following Chelsea women in 2008, it'd be like, great, they were a semi-professional side. Like, right. When Emma was appointed, Chelsea women's team was not fully professional. Like, they were a semi-professional side, and Emma took them to professional status to become the powerhouse that we see and for us love today, right?
That's the thing, right? That's it. It's the fact that she built Chelsea into what they are now.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. So it's like, yeah, if you supported that team before, cool. But the whole thing about Emma Hayes becoming synonymous is that what you see right now was her.
Right. Exactly. And so that's why I have complicated feelings about it, right? Because unfortunately, well, I mean, it's not unfortunately, but like, I love Chelsea like more than the U.S. Women's National Team. Like, I love Chelsea more than dang near any other team, except for at times the Virginia Cavaliers, who inflict pain on me every day of my life. But... they cause me so much pain on a regular basis, but I love them with my entire heart. Like, so for me as a Chelsea fan, it's like I have complicated feelings because I don't really know a Chelsea without Emma, but I'm also like, I wanted to see more years of Mia Fischel and Kat and maybe at times of Sam and Fran. Like, I wanted to see like new skin. Like, I wanted to see that group also for a few seasons under Emma. Maybe if Kat doesn't go to Chelsea, maybe if Mia Fischel doesn't go to Chelsea, I wouldn't have such strong feelings. But I also feel like for the first time, like, or not for the first time, but like Chelsea has a really young core, but also like a really young core that I'm like deeply excited about. And so now for the season, it also puts so much pressure on Chelsea to like win a league title, obviously win an FA Cup, win the Conti Cup, like, but really win the Champions League. And so, you don't have Wolfsburg. Yeah, you don't have Arsenal.
They got Paris FC in your group.
I was like, you got Paris FC though, even though they did just lose to Lyon. But that's besides the point. It is. But so it now also puts like a lot of pressure on this season. And I'm like, okay, but what does that mean for the future of the club? Like, also who's going? I know that Chelsea said, or someone floated the idea that like Emma could say as sporting director, which I personally think is a great idea. I think Emma being sporting director for Chelsea is like big brain energy. It's really smart. I mean,
that's a lot of jobs to
do. It's a lot of jobs.
So I don't know about that one.
She could start scouting dual Americans in Europe.
Right.
But that's why I have complicated feelings, because I'm like, I think she will eventually do great at this U.S. job, right? Like, I do think, like, I think she has the tactical know-how to do it. I think she's also really great at scouting. Like, that's the thing, too. Like, Emma and Chelsea have been really, like, really, really good at scouting. And I think that's really important for the U.S. Also, I mean, we know that she had that article up in The Guardian where she talked about how the U.S. has, on the women's side, has been failing at the youth levels for years and years and years now, and how that needs to be corrected and fixed. I think that's really important. Like, I mean, Emma has built Chelsea's academy, essentially. And it's like, so she has all the qualifications to be a great manager and, like, often manage a lot of the personalities that come with it. Even though two things give me pause. Of one, we do know that sometimes to see Chelsea's heights, it takes, like, a little bit of time. Like, the Chelsea we always see at the beginning of the season is never the Chelsea we end up seeing at the end of the season. And so I will say just broadly, that's something that's a bit tougher to implement when you're only with people for 2 weeks, 3 weeks at a time, maybe, of trying to go in and implement that style and things like that. And then, I mean, the other thing gives me pause is I just, fortunately, love Chelsea Football Club. So I'm like, who are they going to put in place? I am not ready for what we're experiencing on the men's side. We used to be at the highest heights, and now it's like, what's going on? And I'm like, I can only deal with one side of Chelsea being like that at a time. This women's team has been my mental saving grace for a long time. But I do think she will be great at the job. And I think it's like, I know people are going to be like, you can't eat the Olympics. Eat them. Like, eat them right now. Go win a, like, set your sights 2027, even though we don't know what it's going to be. But, like, eat that Olympics now. Or, like, and the thing is, also, you don't actually need to eat the Olympics. Go call in Fischl. Call in Smith. Like, Sof. Like, call in Jaden Shaw. Like, there's so many people that you could also call in that, like, would immediately solve some of the problems that the U.S. women's national team is experiencing. Go put Crystal in the midfield, okay? Put Casey Kruger back there. Put Emily Fox on the right side that she likes to play at. I think there are easy ways to solve it. You can still honestly have a very solid or even a good turnout at the Olympics, but you got to start thinking to 2027. And the real question is the U.S. soccer willing to do that? I would say by this appointment, yes. But I also think there is going to be a fundamental tension of, you don't want a coach who's, like, for Chelsea, on the Chelsea side, you don't want a coach who's going to be pulled in two different directions of thinking about the U.S. during international break and stuff. But then, you got to go win a Champions League now, since it's your last season, you know? So that's my soliloquy of my complicated feelings about this appointment.
So here's the thing. Yes, I feel you from a Chelsea perspective. It's tough. But I actually think what this means for me from a U.S. perspective is good, because you mentioned the summer, the signings that Chelsea had. This is a squad, and it's been kind of weird listening to other pods around. There were some that are like, well, Chelsea's not winning the Champions League this year. And I was like, have you seen their squad right now? Like, I know Kat hasn't played yet, but once she's healthy, like, even without her, we have Ashley Lawrence now. We have Shoka Nuskin now. Like, we have Mia Fischl. Like, I don't think you understand. This squad was already good. Fran Kirby is back and healthy. Like, I don't think you understand. Last year, we beat Lyon with, like, half of a squad, right? Everybody was injured.
You know who was there?
Mary Mielda.
No, me. I was there at the bridge. I was having the greatest time of my life.
My bad. All right. Yeah, I forgot you were there. Well, I'm glad you were there, too.
I literally burst into tears. Yeah. And was so aggressive to all the Lyon players. I went full sicko, full menace.
So for me, it's like, having known that Emma Hayes put this squad together, this is like the Champions League winning squad, or like a squad capable of winning that tournament. Obviously, it's hard. It's a knockout tournament. It's very deep. It has the best teams in it, yada, yada. We know what the Champions League is all about. But in order to get her to leave this, U.S. soccer had to be serious. And that's where I get excited about it, because we know her name was not listed in that short list. We know that it sounds like, from all the all the kind of reports and sources, and we'll find out once it's actually finalized. But it sounds like she possibly could get in the vicinity of pay of Berhalter, which is would be a record for a women's coach. So like we're looking at them actually paying her a really nice salary. We're also looking at no GM on the women's side, which means she'll have more control, which is what she needs. I don't think she would have gone if Mark Graff was still there as the GM, because there was always that tension about like, is this a marketing tool or is this a football team?
Period.
And I think getting her out of the way is super important no matter what. But now Emma Hayes gets to make those decisions, which is what she's really good at. I also think that like she looked at this new generation, this transition that needs to be done. She's not stepping in and saying like, all right, I'm going to have to figure out how to coach Alex Morgan and Lindsey Horan and basically the veteran contingent. Yeah, like I'm not going to, like that's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to have to do this transition that is years behind. We're going to have to fix, as she wrote in that piece, it's going to have influence on the youth product as well. We know that there are a lot of young American players around in other leagues that aren't getting looked at for the national team. Johannes is playing for Ajax in the Champions League and doing quite well as well. We know that Corbin Albert used to play at Notre Dame. She's playing as a deeper lying midfielder now for PSG. Like there are a lot of players that are just like outside of what people think of as the standard 19, 20, sometimes 23 players. And I also think that like people are the Olympics, right? The timeline, it's not ideal. Like I would love to have a manager in before because there is a lot of work to do. But I actually think this works out really well for Emma Hayes because whatever happens at that Olympics, she's going to be able to use it. And she super knows how to use these things. Losses, she can use those. Like she's intense. She'll know how to do that. But I do also think that people are going to struggle a little bit with Emma Hayes because sometimes she makes changes. Like she's not a perfect manager. The thing for me about Emma Hayes is she's not a perfect manager, but she is one of those where it's like when you're mad at her, you're not actually like, give me somebody else, right? You're going to ride with her, which is kind of the problem that Vlatko had. When he started struggling, it was like, get him out of here. And with Emma Hayes, you're going to be like, okay, I don't really understand why like these players are playing out of position, and she will do that. Like even against Villa, Ashley Lawrence came on the pitch as a left midfielder, left winger. She scored a goal playing basically as a central striker. She was right in the middle of the goal. Okay, so like she will play players in random places.
I love and
from
hate
time
her so
time.
Much. I'm like, why are you like this?
Yeah, so like y'all will struggle with her a little bit, but for the most part, this is gonna be fun as hell.
But the thing is also, you will struggle with Emma and you will still win games like 4-0. And it's like,
correct,
okay, but
yes.
Why do we have to do it this way, Emma? Like, please.
Yes.
But like not in the...
She'll learn and then at halftime, the team will switch into what they should have done and they'll be fine. And you're like, why did you start the game that way? But it'll be fine in the end.
And I feel like it's actually a really good comparison with Vlatko because we were like, I mean, Vlatko was a Cup coach. Okay, tell me when Vlatko, first of all, got Chelsea, who was on 2.5 legs. To almost be Barcelona at Camp Nou last season, first of all.
Yeah. People making that comparison, I'm like, can y'all stop? Can y'all stop?
Discount 2019 or the 2020 season, like 2019-2020 season, because Chelsea won on points per game because they had 17 games in hand because scheduling.
Mm-hmm.
Even though knowing how them other teams move, they probably would have won in the end anyway. She won Chelsea's won 3 WSL titles in a row and have had to be perfect. And I mean perfection for the last, like, for your last third of the season. And that's across dang near all competitions. I know there was that
check
one year
runs.
That we got grouped, but, like, it was never a...
Pull up the fixtures because it's wild. When you look at the squad and you see what they needed, you can see the moment where it's like you need to win every game. And they did, and they did, and they did.
And they did.
On a wild run.
And they've done it 3 years in a row. Like, that's my thing. Yeah. And, like, maybe if you want to talk about, okay, well, maybe your game management in the early part of the season should probably be better. But also with Emma, we kind of vibe out in the front. And then we know that, honestly, Jonas and Gareth are going to do something silly and the teams are going to fumble and Chelsea just need to stay good and they will get there. Like the runs that, and like also I think that if you haven't watched it, go on DAZN's YouTube and watch. They basically did a Chelsea All or Nothing for 6 episodes. People want to talk about mentality with the U.S. team. The mentality that Emma Hayes got, she got it from literally being an assistant coach at the Chicago Red Stars. Like, yes, she got that mentality coaching, assistant coaching in the NWSL and talking about that quote unquote American mentality. And there are so many times across that, like, truly across that documentary where she's like, this is not good enough. This is Chelsea. You think she's not going to repeat that to someone who's slacking on the national team or isn't doing good enough?
Especially this because she holds the U.S. style in such high regard. Like, she has literally said the words, like, I was born in England, but I was made in America.
Period.
She says that. Like, girl, she, this is like a homecoming for her. And she loves the mentality here. She knows what it can be. That's another reason why I'm so happy about it, because she gets it. And that's why I'm like, I know people talk about the U.S. and they needing like defined style. Now they just need the dog back. Like that's really what it is. Like they need, you need to get the players on the pitch who don't have like the entitlement. You need to get the young kids out there balling, going at each other. Like that's what it is. Like these young kids are disrespectful. We need to curate that, feed that, let them go out there and do their thing, because like, this is what the team's all about. Like ruthlessness. It's where she got that. Like it became a Chelsea thing. But where she got it was here, coaching in the States. She learned that super like intense competition, but also it's not heartless intensity. Like it early in her career, it was, and she kind of talks about that too, and kind of apologized to some of the players, like, you know, Magda Eriksson and Fran Kirby, that she kind of wasn't there for her players, and she changed that some years ago. And the relationship she has with Fran Kirby is special. The relationship she has with Millie Bright is special. So she's like a coach that can kind of do both. And that is super rare, where you can be like super, super demanding, but then also be like an empathetic and caring figure as well. And that's why I think like she's one of the coaches that would have been perfect for like bringing in younger players, because she's going to be able to tell them some hard shit, but they're going to know that like she's ultimately there for them, and like she's going to get the best out of them. And that's hard to do. So like I'm super here for this.
I will still be in my feelings at least till the end of the season, and then I will get around to it. But unfortunately, I just love this.
I mean, it's just going to be surreal seeing Emma Hayes in like a U.S. like training gear, seeing her like on the sideline. Like I'm just like, I want to fast forward time. I want to see it.
I don't want to fast forward time unless that time ends with Chelsea winning a Champions League at the end of the season. That's the only way we're fast forward. That's the only way I'm fast.
If they go out, I'll be like, oof.
Andre,
oof.
Why do you think I'm in my feelings right now? Because unfortunately, I always think of the inevitable. And also, I'm like, who are you putting in? Because we just talked about a coach who's technically rumored for the job, who has at one point in her career actually played for Chelsea.
Yeah.
But you can't. Now, look, I do think Casey would love to play her like me official.
But that would be like a massive identity shift.
I don't know. Yeah, it would be an absolutely massive identity shift. And also because the U.S. wants to bring over Denise Reddy with Emma. She would naturally, if Emma leaves and she stays, like, it would be natural for her to become head coach. But that would not happen. So, yes, I have complicated feelings about this hire, because unfortunately
mine ain't complicated, just because like I mean
I just love the silly
this was gonna
I love
happen
that
at
silly
some
football
point.
Club I know, but I wasn't emotionally prepared, but also I mean but also I feel
but
like
it's
my bigger
so much better to her coming to us than like going to Spain or something.
I mean,
right?
Well,
like
obviously
if she was gonna leave, like let this be the move. So I'm super excited that like I didn't want her to leave at all, but I knew it was gonna happen. But it's this move,
Andre,
at this particular time
logically thinking with my heart. I can't lie though, I did like, if this was like one more year, because I can't lie, I did want to see like 2 seasons of Kat and Mia like grow under her at Chelsea. I will say that, like, that is the one thing that I'm also like, oh, I would have liked to see that for, I mean, when Kat eventually gets back, like more than, you know, half a season or something. Now maybe it's the greatest half a season of football I will ever experience in my entire life, and my heart will explode and I will have the greatest time of my life. But I wish there was a bit more of it. Do you think that's why Millie maybe secretly didn't celebrate that goal on her 250th appearance, because she knew in the back of her mind what was about to happen?
It's definitely a possibility, because that was a weird reaction.
It wasn't like she scored a goal. She just turned around like, yeah. And I was like, girl,
I think she was upset. Because
she was
like
upset.
The, Yeah, I think it was more so of like finally, but it was funny because it ain't like the goal took forever to come. I just knew that they were playing much better than Villa, but it was just kind of like, it was funny to see her reaction to that goal. So maybe she did though. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. It was weird behavior, and I can't lie. I don't like how they told the players. And I mean, part of it's like the leak, and it's like, babes, could this have waited one more day? Yeah.
Yeah, I just really think that like when they got close to actually like finalizing a contract and like the agreement happened, I think there are too many people that knew things, because as soon as that statement went out, we saw like the Equalizer posted something, Backheel posted something,
well,
the
no, Athletic Backheel posted was something. Before. I think
yeah, Backheel was the first.
Like
shout 8 a.m.
in the morning
out there.
Like yeah, 8 a.m. So, in the like, morning. That Chelsea game wasn't even over.
Yeah,
that actually
so,
hadn't
like,
even
for
started.
Me, it's like I think that whoever knew had already said. And they got word that like this was going to be reported, and it's not the way to do it. Clearly, like you want to give the players like the first heads up, so them finding out it's not great in the end. But I do think that like people found out, and they had to just like adjust and accelerate the timelines massively.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I mean, I'm super excited about this.
I will come around to it. I just unfortunately love this.
I'll be sad if you know like if I, depending on how the season ends for Chelsea. Because it will still feel like unfinished business if they can't get the Champions League, but also like telling a squad like y'all got to win the Champions League now. That's a hell of a lot of pressure on the squad, and I kind of want them to just focus on continuing to build what they're doing, because I think they're getting in like the players that are new are getting embedded into the team. Like the Champions League is going to start pretty soon, so they got a group they need to focus on getting out of. So like, don't get too far with it, but like this is a squad. And like any coach would be super, super happy to come in here. They just got to make sure they find the right one. But for the U.S., like my thing has been like the talent has been here. We know this. We've been saying this. We need somebody who actually believes it. U.S. soccer decided to be serious with the hire because that shortlist was not serious. I would have been maybe okay with Laura Harvey, more like, let's see what happens. But like this to me is we know we fucked up. We need to find like the top person and give them whatever they need, because they need to build some shit. And when you're talking about building something in women's soccer, there aren't many, many coaches out there that can say they've built as much or more than Emma Hayes. And so I'm not worried about it being her first international job. I think it's good for her in terms of work-life balance as well. She's going to have a bit more time to spend with her son, but when it's go time. And you know how Emma Hayes is. And I from the innovation as well, Chelsea, from a medical standpoint, how they structure their training sessions, all of that stuff is innovative.
Don Scott's coming
that
back.
Business.
I don't know.
but like, yeah, it's just like she has built a holistic thing at Chelsea. It's not just that she stands on the touchline and directs traffic. She does a lot more than that. And I think that to me is what makes me super excited about this, because that's what the U.S. has needed. And they need somebody who gets it. And Emma Hayes gets it from the U.S. perspective. She's going to have a fun with these players. Like, she's going to love Trinity Rodman. She's going to love Jalen Howe. Welcome back. I'm going to say it again. She likes people who wreck midfield. She tried to get Oberdorf signed early, but I think when she was 17, she tried to sign her to Chelsea. All Jalen Howe does is beat people up in the midfield. She's going to love that. Welcome back to the team, Jalen Howe. Sam Coffey, she's going to love you. Emily Fox, I don't know what's going to happen, but you might end up in midfield because she goes on adventures, or she might end up as left back. Crystal Dunn, I know the left back thing happened at Chelsea.
She played at seven different positions, everyone replying me on Twitter.
She also played everywhere else. So she won't hesitate to put Crystal Dunn wherever she needs to put Crystal Dunn. I think she's obviously going to love Sophia Smith. She obviously already loves Mia Fischel, which is a big thing that we needed.
She's
so like,
love
yeah.
Jaden Shaw.
Yeah. She's going to love Jaden Shaw. Jaden Shaw is one of those like super tricky, interesting players who does things simply, but very effectively. She's going to love that. Like there's a lot of talent, y'all. Like this team is going to look different. If she's able to do things the way she wants, like, I don't even know if they actually technically need to eat the Olympics. I think you eat the expectations for the Olympics, but I think she can actually,
I think Emma can cook with 2 months.
Correct. Yes, that's what I was about to say. Like, it might be, like, they may not win it, but the shit gonna be fun. No worries. I understand.
The last thing. I completely agree that Emma wouldn't have come if Kate Markgraf was still there. And also, you think Emma's leaving a lifetime job at Chelsea? Because don't forget, she signed a new contract in 2021 that had no end date. They said it ends when we see fit, aka we are giving her a lifetime contract to be at this club forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Like, she's not leaving for, first of all, a bag and total control. Like,
yeah,
don't think she's not getting the same deal that Vlatko got.
Oh, yeah, no, this is much more comprehensive. Like, it's going to be interesting to see what the ultimate title is for her, because I don't know if it's just going to be like head coach or manager. But as long as there's no GM, she'll be doing that stuff too. And that's what we need. So
that is very much what we need. Ooh, maybe, do we get the 3-5-2?
Well, that's the other thing. She changes, like, from Chelsea fans will tell you, you think you're good? You think you got a formation? No.
We change formations every 10 minutes, darling.
All the time. Sometimes it comes out as a back three and it's a back four. Sometimes it comes out as a back four and it's a back three, actually. And you'll all of a sudden, sometimes Neve Charles will be playing wing back while Ev Parise is on the other side actually playing right back. Like, it's just super imbalanced the way that she does it. But, like, yeah, get ready. The tactical flexibility is there. Again, there will be times when she does all of these changes where you're like, yo, what the hell? Why? Why are we doing it this way? Like, you're making the game so much harder for yourself. But then halftime, it'll change. It'll be fine. But, like, yeah, it ain't going to be perfect. But I honestly don't know who they could have got that was better. This is going to be better than Emma Hayes right now. Like, this is the perfect hire to me. Like, if I could have gotten... If you give me a blank check and tell me that anybody that I approach is going to say yes, I'm saying, sorry, Chelsea. This is going to hurt my little Chelsea heart. I got on a Chelsea hat right now. It's going to hurt my heart. But
oh, the pain Hayes, come in my on. Heart. the only other hire that I would have been excited about, or there are three hires I would have been excited about, like, from the international stage. One I will say would have been Laura Harvey. Like, I think that would have been a good hire. Tony Gustafsson, because I think he's in really well with Australia, despite them also playing sometimes on a dream and a prayer and two hamstrings. And then also, obviously, Serena. Like, those would have been the three hires I would be excited about. But we should have known that old boy from Juventus was not going to be Joe Montemurro. What?
Oh, God. That was silly. Yeah, I was like,
we should have known that was a ploy. Should have known that was a deep fake. Look, talk about this Federation being serious. I don't know. Sometimes I don't trust them to be serious. Technically, they brought back all bounce
packs. My only belief in the way that they're only being serious now because they finally got embarrassed. We've been telling them, you're going to get embarrassed. You're going to get embarrassed pretty soon. If the Olympics weren't embarrassing enough for you, if you keep doing the same shit you're doing, you're going to get embarrassed at the World Cup. And that's exactly what happened. So I think now that they've been embarrassed, look at that. They want to be serious.
Yeah, that is true. And also, I mean, you're saying, is this a marketing ploy? Well, guess what? For your marketing dollars to come in, you're going to need a highly successful team. So
exactly.
This is a smart, soccer and financial decision for the Federation.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm sure I will have plenty more to say about this. I think I'm going to have to write something too, because there are a lot of things in my head about, like, what this means, what this could be. I know I've been listening to a lot of podcasts as well, and, like, people across the pond, my England homies, they're struggling to cope with this. They're also saying some weird things about, like, the U.S. thinking that it's like a talent problem. And I want them to continue to think that. I really do, because they're going to introduce some people. They're going to get introduced to some people that, like we saw Colombia. They got introduced to Alyssa Thompson, Jaden Shaw, Mia Fischel. There's plenty more where that came from.
Mia Fischel is not going to score a banger at their stadium and then, like, sexy walk or jerk as a celebration? I can't wait for it to happen. But one thing, number one priority for Emma is, I know she's going to do it. She's going to have to fix that midfield. She's going to have to do it.
Yeah, that's the other thing is that, like, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that Emma Hayes believes in a midfield. I know she does. We weren't able to sign 100%. The midfielders we needed and wanted, but she did try to sign Grace Guillermo. She did try to sign Lena Oberdorf.
Look, finally got Shokin.
Aaron Cuthbert playing in midfields, balling. Like, yeah.
Yo, we got Nuskin, who is my new favorite player, and Aggie Beaver Jones, who's also one of my faves now.
She's fun.
She's fun.
And that's Academy player too. She's again, young. Again. Fun. Yep.
Yeah, definitely going to be some interesting things going for Chelsea though. Maybe she tries to naturalize Lauren James.
it'd be greedy because we don't need it, but also like, let's check the family tree. Let's just check the family tree.
If that ever happened, all y'all would have to block me.
She wouldn't be able to step in England no more.
You would have
She'd
to block
have to live
me.
In the U.S.
You would
permanently.
Have to forget my existence because I would shout about it every single day of my life. Now, look, I know that. Look, I know she probably loves crumpets and bangers and mash and beans on toast, but
not crumpets. So there's gonna be a lot. This is gonna be very, very interesting. I think that like the timing of this is perfect. Like, I don't think the U.S. was embarrassed enough to have hired Emma Hayes and given her the control she needs even a year ago, even after the Olympics. So I think this is perfect. Like, she's gonna get what she needs to get to be able to be successful in this job. And I think that's what it was always going to take. But they were always going to be reluctant to do that until they got shown that, like, the way what y'all think y'all doing, you're doing the opposite. Like, things are getting bad now. And that's the problem. It's all internal. It's all internal infrastructure. Like you said, the talent's there. So it's all the other stuff. And I don't know if there's a better person in football right now better at the other stuff. Building the other stuff than what Emma Hayes has done at Chelsea. So it's going to be fun. Here for it. Anything else to say before we get out of here?
I'm going to have to save my heated and hype for next week, even though y'all already heard my heated, which was daylight savings.
True.
And I'll save my hype about chicken wings for next week.
Well, I figured my hype is just going to be this. So, this is kind of an extended version of my hype. So, that's what it is.
Okay, well, my hype are these chicken wings from the place called Bia in Brooklyn. There's absolutely no reason for them to be as good as they are. I order them chicken wings literally three times a week. They are sweet and spicy and super spicy and so delicious. And there's absolutely no reason for a pho spot to have such good chicken wings. They're incredible. I think about them once a week. Really, three times a week. Which is why I get them.
I was going to say, be honest now. Like, I have food that I love, and I understand that, like, once a week seems like a lot. But when I actually love something, it's almost an everyday experience.
The amount of people that I've been like, sorry, I can't text you back right now. I'm having a spiritual experience with a spicy chicken wing. It's been those wings. I've texted at least four people. I texted Andre after our last episode saying my hype for next week. Remind me my hype is chicken wings. And it's these chicken wings from Bia. They're incredible. I love them with my entire heart. Don't you tell me anything bad about that restaurant because they have gluten-free chicken pho, incredible chicken wings. And they're after my heart. I sounded like my dad literally can like eat a chicken bone. Like, he'll start crunching on the bone. He loves chicken wings that much. And I'm like that when I eat those wings. That man is born and raised 20 miles north of the North Carolina border.
Well,
on a farm.
That will absolutely do it. I love black country folk. They're fun.
He's so secretly black country. But with these wings, do I start eating them like how my dad eats a chicken wing? Yeah. One time my roommate came out and I just had a bone just hanging out. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I apologize so deeply for how I'm eating these chicken wings. And I called my mom and I was like, Mom, you got to take the chicken wings away. And she was like, why? And I was like, I'm eating them like dad. And she was like, oh my God. Look, I fuck up them chicken wings. Sorry for the cursing, but they're delicious. They're so good. There's no reason for these chicken wings to be as good. From literally a pho place that their menu is like 10 items long. But them chicken wings hit hard every single time. They're my everything. I love them deeply.
You know what? There ain't no better way to end the podcast than that. So I'm done.
Bye, y'all. Thanks for listening to Diaspora United Podcast. Please subscribe and rate and review us anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Diaspora United Pod. That's Diaspora UTDPOD. And message us if there's anything you want us to talk about in our next podcast. See you next time.